This is the LA Local Evening Update, keeping you caught up with the latest from KNX News. Check back each weekday afternoon for the LA Local's full daily briefing on what you need to know in SoCal.
I'm Rob Archer. The billionaire owner of the LA Times wants to put an AI-powered bias meter on articles, and that is getting a lot of pushback from journalists. But first, we're getting more information about the naked man found at Newberry Park High School, who is the suspect in the death of his teenage brother. Authorities say Zuberi Sharp is the son of Calvin Sharp, who was convicted of chasing a six-year-old boy with a meat cleaver and killing him back in Newberry Park back in 2007. The older Sharp claimed to be insane at the time of the killing, but was found sane by a judge who sentenced him to life without parole. Now, Zuberi allegedly attacked his 15-year-old brother inside a Newberry Park home last night. The teenager found with blunt force trauma to the head. He died on the way to the hospital. Sharp was taken into custody on the Newberry Park High School football field about half a mile away. He was naked at the time of the arrest. Shootout between a security guard and two men who tried to rob a check-cashing business in mid-city LA ends with one man dead, one wounded, and one suspect on the run. Pete Demetrio reports.
LAPD West Bureau homicide detective Sam Marullo said the attempted robbery took place at the check-cashing location in the Venice Plaza.
The owner was accompanied by an armed security officer. Both were confronted by the two male black suspects. At one point, there was a struggle for money, and then a shooting occurred between the security officer and the suspect, who was later pronounced deceased at scene. The additional suspect was last seen running eastbound Venice Boulevard and is still outstanding at this point.
The security guard is recovering from his injuries. In the meantime, detectives are analyzing video from cameras in the mall to try to get a clear image of that second suspect. They're also running the plates from the car the two suspects used to arrive at the location in an effort to track down the owner. In the Mid-City area, I'm Pete Demetrio, KNX News, 97.1 FM.
A person was arrested in an armed robbery early this morning in Hacienda Heights that resulted in a freeway closure. When sheriff's deputies got to the scene on 7th Avenue, a former Motel 6, they heard several gunshots from an armed robbery. Part of the 60 was closed for the investigation. That suspect was arrested about an hour later. They reopened the road. A pair of L.A. County residents found guilty of armed robberies at local businesses last year. They're both from the Vermont Square neighborhood, and they were each found guilty in federal court today of one count of conspiracy to interfere with commerce by robbery. They call that a federal Hobbs Act crime. Two counts of Hobbs Act robbery, two counts of brandishing a firearm, and a crime of violence. That's all according to the U.S. Attorney's Office. The billionaire owner of the L.A. Times has outlined plans to have a so-called bias meter next to stories starting next month. Patrick Soon-Chong says a meter would be powered by AI and allow readers to press a button and get both sides of the story. He made his announcement on the Flyover Country podcast, hosted by conservative commentator Scott Jennings.
I'm giving you some little breaking news here, but this is what we're quietly building behind the scenes.
No kidding.
And I'm hopeful by January we will launch this.
So we're talking about a fusion of content created by journalists and technology that you're developing that will give the readers a more well-rounded view, or the complete view of any given story at any given time.
Correct.
Soon-Chong recently appointed Jennings to the paper's editorial board in the wake of controversy over the decision to not endorse either Kamala Harris or Donald Trump. The plans for a bias meter have drawn a lot of angry responses from journalists at the Times. Their union issued a statement saying the owner has given no evidence or examples of any bias by them. They already abide by strict ethics guidelines. The move also led to the resignation of Times legal columnist Harry Lipman, who accused the paper of trying to appease President-elect Trump. Today was the final day as an L.A. City Council member for Paul Krikorian, but he's still going to have a big role at City Hall. Krikorian has been chosen to lead L.A.'s new Office of Major Events. Craig Figner spoke to Mayor Bass.
To head up the Office of Major Events, you know, Craig, it's not just about the Olympics. To us, it is about 2026 and preparing for those events, 2027, the Super Bowl, then we get to the Olympics. And what my hope is that by the time we get to 2028, we will have had several dress rehearsals in the World Cup, in the All-Star basketball game, and our city will be prepared. But there's so much we need to do.
Is LA just a tiny bit behind, or are we right where we should be?
Well, you know what? The first thing he's going to do is come in and make an assessment. I'm nervous that we might be a little bit behind, but we will see.
Krikorian was in Paris for the Summer Olympics for all 12 days. Mayor Bass says he was there to study what L.A. needs to do and what problems the city can avoid when we host the 2028 Games. A resident of Wilmington may soon join the L.A. Harbor Commission. Mayor Bass nominated Yolanda De La Torre to fill the seat left by the departure of Michael Munoz. The Trade, Travel, and Tourism Committee going to take up the nomination next month. De La Torre serves as the regional vice president of the YMCA of Metropolitan Los Angeles. Before that, she was the regional executive director for Wilmington and Gardena Carson with the YMCA. A former executive of TMZ is being accused of embezzling $100,000. TMZ is taking Alex Wood to small claims court. According to the lawsuit, TMZ says Wood, who worked for the company from January last year to February of this year, exploited his position of trust by siphoning money out of petty cash. The lawsuit says he admitted stealing the money, promised to repay it, made a series of payments from April through July, but then stopped and still owes about $45,000. But the most TMZ can recover in small claims court is just over $6,000. A bomb threat caused the evacuation of the state capitol building this morning. The CHP, which provides security in Sacramento for the building, says the threat was received in an email. Everybody was ordered out, asked to work from home while officers conducted a search. And just after 2 o'clock this afternoon, officials said that threat was unfounded. The city of Pasadena inviting the public to a ribbon-cutting ceremony tomorrow to celebrate the completion of a restoration project at Arroyo Seco. The enhancement work is finally finished for 3.5 miles of trails in the area, making them safer and easier for hikers, joggers, and nature lovers. It's just phase one of the project, with more work. It's going to be focusing on other areas. The ceremony starts tomorrow at 11 a.m. A DACA recipient talks about the potential impact of mass deportations under another Trump administration. That is coming up as Nonstop News at 5 continues. Presented by My Lemon Law Lawyer. Text Lemon to 40333 for a free case review. Back down to plans by the owner of the LA Times to introduce a so-called bias meter powered by AI starting next month. Billionaire Patrick Soon-Shiong says the meter would appear by stories. The move comes after the paper decided at the last moment before the election to scrap plans to endorse Kamala Harris for president. And joining us now live is former top LA Times editor Christina Bellantoni, who is now a professor of journalism at USC. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So right off the bat, what's your reaction to the idea of this bias meter appearing next to stories?
So I actually served on the journalist advisory board for an AI company, a startup that did a similar effort. I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't work with them anymore, but I worked for now almost 2 years, just sort of helping them figure out, does this sort of evaluation work and how do they do it? Well, they teach the AI to identify certain words, but just throwing out an example, if somebody called somebody an idiot, but that's in quotes, the bias meter would like pick that up, even if it's the most straight story in the world. There's a lot of examples of people picking apart this type of work, saying it's like pretty challenging to do. And then, of course, you think about if the LA Times is investing its money in this technology, that takes resources away from the critically important local reporting that this newspaper should be doing here in LA. The work you all do, the work LAist does, the work that the LA Times does, other local publications, we all need more help in this. There needs to be more coverage. And it just is such a distraction. And everything that Dr. Soon-Shiong said on that podcast was pretty damaging to those hardworking journalists that have nothing to do with political coverage. They're covering corruption and digging where they need to dig and looking at transportation efforts, all these things. So it feels a little misplaced. And if I were still working there, I would hope that I would be able to say that openly and just have a better conversation about this. And again, the journalists of the LA Times have made real clear they're not thrilled with how he's going around and talking about the paper, implying that there's some sort of bias there when 80% of the great work they do has nothing to do with President-elect Trump.
And as somebody who teaches journalism, you know the old funny example, you got one person on who says the planets orbit around the sun. So to be fair, you have to put another guy on who says, no, the sun orbits around the Earth. But that's not really fair because that's not factual. Is that a problem when someone who is trying to decide bias may themselves be biased? And I know that they're talking about AI powering this, but we already know that AI can be biased, you know, because it's programmed by the input that's put into it.
Yeah. So, for example, there's this is going around on Blue Sky right now, the terrible shooting in Manhattan of the United Healthcare executive. There were bias indicators that said that the report didn't have enough context about the healthcare industry. When it's a breaking news story about someone being murdered, that is one flaw that can just immediately come to mind. And in the end, these things are completely subjective. Now, where Dr. Sun Xiang has a point that can be explored is that the everyday reader, the audience, and in fact, many of those 77 million people who voted for President-elect Trump in November, they don't understand the difference, this arcane notion of an editorial page or an op-ed, or these things don't make sense because they're vestige print product, which is not as how most people get their news at this point, right? So there's something to be said with better labeling of content, whether that's opinion or analysis. But again, who's the arbiter of that? And there is a real shift. So one example I've been using, when I was there running politics at the LA Times in 2016, 2017, the editorial board wrote a series of op-eds that they then packaged into a book and sold it for money, for revenue for the paper, called Our Dishonest President. It ended up winning some awards and getting a lot of recognition. They also sold merch that said, "We will not shut up," which was a reference to the LA Times getting shut out of some briefing in the White House briefing room. It was a very clear position of the editorial board. And for our journalists trying to do work and talk to Republicans and Democrats, they got a lot of grief about that because people did not understand the lines. And so that's fair. But at the same time, all of it just really puts this already hobbled newsroom in a difficult place. Invest in your reporting, which is what you win Pulitzers for, which is what you... But this community depends on you for. We're the second largest city in America. It should not be a news desert.
Right. Former top LA Times editor Christina Bellantoni, thank you so much for joining us today.
Have a great night. Thanks.
How would Donald Trump's proposed mass deportations impact LA? We're going to talk to a DACA recipient. That's coming up on Nonstop News at 5. What's going to happen if and when the mass deportations planned by President-elect Trump begin? That's a question on a lot of people's minds. Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero talked with a DACA dreamer, Areli Hernandez from Los Angeles, who now works for the Coalition for Human Immigrant Rights.
Let me tell you that across our community, not only folks like me who have DACA, but also those who have TPS, and also the community who is unprotected, is very much anxious that he is back in office. When he was in office in 2016, the first day that he was in office, we saw him sign executive orders that put our lives in the U.S. at risk. And really, a lot of folks talk about what could happen. But what we also need to talk about is the fact that there are undocumented families in the U.S. is a result of inaction on immigration. It's been nearly 40 years since there was an ability to apply for legalization, to apply for a green card. And many families have remained in the U.S. waiting for that, my family included. And so when folks ask why there are so many immigrants who are undocumented, we have to look back at the inaction that has happened. And that brings us to this moment now where there are families who continue to live without documented status. I grew up here in California. I have lived through Prop 187. And we have seen that there has been inaction on immigration in the federal government. And that brings us to this moment where so many families fear for themselves and the ability for them to remain united.
What are you doing for you?
So one of the first things I did was I looked for my card because I have DACA. There is a card that I'm issued. I have to renew my DACA, which stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. This is a work permit that also is my protection from deportation. And this is a physical card that I get in the mail, and I know where it is, and I carry it with me everywhere I go. And, you know, I will be honest with you, one of the things I'm constantly doing is looking over my shoulder. I don't know who is behind me and who is looking for me. Because we've seen in the past that Operations happen when folks are driving, where folks are living their daily lives. And though I'm protected, I have a card that says that I will not be deported. I still carry the fear of deportation, but I am not shied away from still continuing to speak out about the fact that we need to change this. People should not live this way. In the LA area, in the last Trump administration, we saw folks deported within hours. They were detained in the morning, and by the afternoon, they were over the border. So the other thing to bring up here is that there are many human and civil rights violations that happen when these processes happen. When immigration is out on the street, it's the whole of communities that are at danger. It is not just immigrants. Immigration has operations in neighborhoods, in schools, and that is what is at risk.
Countdown 2024 airs on KNX News at 2:30 weekday afternoons, also weeknights at 8, also available on demand at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Markets closed the week with the Dow down today 123, the S&P up 15, and NASDAQ up 159.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Entertainment Report. He's a trailblazer among athletes, but the media company co-founded by basketball star LeBron James is facing the same headwinds as other entertainment companies.
Being an independent production company in Hollywood is challenging.
And that's Bloomberg's Lucas Shaw, who says Hollywood production companies that sprouted during the past decade to serve the growing demands of streaming services are struggling as those services cut back on production and scrutinize budgets.
The premiums that these production companies get paid have come down as streaming services have started to cut back. And so you have this company that, you know, raised a bunch of money, invested a lot, figuring that there would be this expanding entertainment business, and that just hasn't happened in the last couple of years.
James's Spring Hill company recently agreed to a merger with Fullwell 73, the British production outfit behind the Kardashians and the Grammy Awards. It's a deal that'll give the combined company more scale during a challenging business environment. Karen Moscow, Bloomberg Radio.
That's your nonstop news at 5 for Friday, presented by My Lemon Law Lawyer. Text LEMON to 40333 for a free case review.